Gene talking, giving some response to questions that were asked yesterday. But first, I want to just say I really appreciate Representative Crummell on this committee asking a question of the Department of Administrative Services regarding rent in the Archives Building. It has been a long and ongoing issue, and I really just appreciate the committee raising the question. And we'll have a meeting, and hopefully we'll get some better resolution. So thank you very much.
For the record, I'm Jean Strait, and I'm the Deputy Secretary of State. Before you, we handed out some responses to your questions from yesterday and actually from Tuesday, one question from Tuesday. The first one was the Tuesday question from Representative Fire. You asked us what our return rate on the customer service surveys for the corporations division. And in 2004, it's been around 23-24%. So, and what they do is they pick a two-week period. Every filing that comes in gets a survey, and then it's up to the customer to respond. So that's what that is. Yesterday, Senator Whitsitt asked us about what happened to his data in the ORSTAR application, and what we found out that it was a bug, that the data was still there. But that, and hopefully I can explain this so it's understandable, but what happened was the number, the system didn't read the number, didn't recognize it. It was in brackets, so it was a negative number, and it didn't recognize it, so it made it a zero. And what I was told is that it's in one component. It happens with amendments prior to filings. And so it's been recorded, and it is on the fix list for the system to get that fixed. And staff is working with treasurers to make them aware that this is an issue until it does get fixed.
Question.
That may be. I'm sorry. Thank you, Chair Jensen. Did that make the entire report disappear?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt. This is what I got told by the technical people, and I don't know that I can really explain much more than that.
Well, perhaps we can do this just within my office.
Yeah, why don't we set up a meeting?
Because the entire report disappeared. It wasn't there was like we had never entered anything.
Okay, I will find out, and we'll set up a meeting.
Senator Johnson.
If it was a bracketed number, I can't believe that Senator Whitsitt is the only person with bracketed numbers. I don't think it picked him out. If a bracketed number is symptomatic of a system failure, does it have broader applications?
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, what I was told is it doesn't, that it's only specifically in an amendment right prior to a filing, but I can't tell you that for sure. Honestly, I'm not the one that can explain this to you.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
I've had this conversation with the Secretary, and I would respectfully submit to you guys, you got to get a credible answer for this issue, because it is pervasive throughout the building.
Okay.
And it's got to be a credible answer. I mean, it's undermining the integrity of everything that's happening, not everything, but a lot of stuff that's happening in your shop. And I believe that there is an answer. What you've provided today isn't it. And this isn't just Doug Whitsitt's problem. It's a perception problem, and I think it has to get addressed head on.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, I agree with you. So we will work on that.
Please proceed.
Okay, the next question was Chair Jensen asked us how many vacancies we have, and we have 11 vacancies.
Mr. Chair, out of a staff of how many?
205.
5%.
Follow. How long have they been vacant?
I don't have that information, but we have three limited durations that are vacant. Two of those are HAVA positions, and one is being filled with a contractor. two permanent positions are in recruitment process right as we speak. So they will be filled in the next few months.
Mr. Chair,
could you provide the committee with a complete rundown of vacancies and how long they've been vacant and the status of the two recruitments? What positions are the two recruitments?
One is, let me see if I was given that information. I think one is in archives, and I'm not sure where the other one is. But I can give that to you. I can get that to you. It does give you in our response here, three of them are limited duration, like I said. One is being filled with a contractor. Two are, I think one of those is in our corporations division and one is in archives, and they're being currently recruited. And then six of them are in our audits division. And they are, and that is what Chuck referred to you earlier this week on, he's been having recruitment issues, and they're continually trying to recruit, but it's hard to get the positions filled. Or once they get them filled, then people go to better paying jobs or different agencies.
One more, Mr. Chair. Tell me about the positions being filled with a contractor. That's just, it sounds like an unusual arrangement.
Chair Jensen, Senator Johnson, actually that's the developer position that we talked about yesterday in the IS division. What happened with that position was it was filled, and it has been filled, and a few months ago the person in the position took a permanent job within the agency. She moved to the configuration manager's job. So that position was vacant. And instead of recruiting for it, we decided it was a limited duration. We didn't know if it would be approved. It wouldn't be prudent to put a person in that. So we went to a contract that, a statewide contract that's called NetSource. It's with NetSource. And it's for professional IT people that you can hire. So we decided that would be the most efficient way to fill it, fill the need.
That makes sense.
Let me go on with that and ask a question, too. Last session, I think it was, that we required agencies to submit vacancies to DAS. I'm not sure whether the Secretary of State's office is accountable under that, or required under that. Because I recognize some differences in the Secretary of State and Treasurer's Office versus some of the other agencies. But there is supposed to be a reporting statewide of the vacancies, and DAS is supposed to have a list of those. The idea and the concern, I think, on a part of the legislature last time when that legislation was passed, is that we get nervous about vacancies and vacancies being used to pad the budget of the agency for various and sundry things. We'd prefer to address the financial problems straight up in the Ways and Means process rather than creative accounting or whatever it may be, however we may want to refer to it. That seemed like a reasonable thing last time, but this hasn't done nearly, I think, what we wanted to have happen. As a consequence, I've dropped a bill this time that after 6 months that vacancy is not filled, that the director or whoever is the person in charge will submit a report or submit rationale for continuing the vacancy. If that is adequate rationale, then fine, we go on from there. If they either do not submit the rationale, or if the rationale is somewhat unjustifiable, then the vacancy just goes away, the position just goes away. I wanted to let you know what's going on in relationship to this topic. I have no idea whether that bill will pass. You know, that's another topic, but it is something that at least I will be trying to move forward trying to here be upfront with what our concerns are as far as vacancies. And it's certainly not our intention to, try to micromanage agencies. It's far too complex a job for part-time legislators to. They may want to get involved in it, but all we'll do is bury them in a sea of paper and other things if they try to get too far into that task. So. But we do appreciate your bringing this information back to us and appreciate Senator Johnson's questions with this, and we would appreciate your responses to those questions. And
okay.
Thank you very much.
Chair Jensen, I would just like to state, to reply to some of that, what you said. You know, our intent is to fill our positions. We need those people. So
you
know.
Thank you very much for that comment.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. And 5% doesn't sound like a frightening number to me in terms of vacancies, so I don't know. I have no idea what the norm would be, but in an agency your size, I would assume, with that many personnel, I would assume some vacancies at all times.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Okay. Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jesse. Just for my edification, to the extent that your expenditure limitation is not spent on these employees that are not, where the positions are not filled, what happens to that money?
Chair Jensen, Senator Whitsitt, it goes away at the end of the biennium if we don't use the limitation. For some programs, like I said, with the IS position, we chose to fill that with a temporary position through a contractor because we had the need for the position, but the time frame was such that we didn't know if we were going to get this position approved, so we didn't want to fill it with a real person and have them go away in June. In audits, I know they do a lot of contracting with outside auditors when they don't have enough staff. Or, you know, that's a manager's issue. They look at their resources and make determinations. So sometimes it does get spent on contracting out work, and then sometimes it's with temporary staff, you know, and then if we don't spend it, it goes away at the end of the biennium.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The final question is, Senator Witz has asked us to check with Dave Henderson about your acceptable use policy. Those policies are attached. That policy is attached. They also have a frequently asked question list, is what I was told, and that is also attached. Dave did reply to me in email that said it would not be appropriate to use your state computers to file campaign reports. That they allow limited personal use of PCs, but they specifically prohibit using them for any campaign-related work. So those are the answers to your questions.
Mr. Chair.
Thank
you, Mr. Chair. One of the things, and if Dave is watching, he'll hear this, but I think one of the things we might want to do would be to make a suggestion to Dave that, that this be... published in a way that when a new legislator or their staff, or that we have a changeover in staff and that sort of thing, comes on board, that there is a read and sign line on these. This is an acceptable use policy, and that designates then that the person has actually read the document and signs it, and attesting that they have read it and that they understand it and that they will comply with it. I think one of the things that has happened, we found in JLCIMT, Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology, last session and during the interim, is that, for example, we had somebody over in revenue that decided to go start looking at porn sites using the state's computers and picked up a virus, and the system over there was crashed for about 12 hours. that is a absolute violation of the acceptable use and use policy. And I think that, you know, making sure that all state employees are aware of that is extremely important.
Thank you, Representative, for that comment. My rebuttal, and it's not meant to be a rebuttal to that, but someone who would use their computer for that particular purpose, it might be an exercise in futility to hope that you could educate them through signing something or reading something or passing a rule, but I'll let it, you know.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, the one thing that it would do is put them on notice that that is a terminatable offense at the occurrence.
Yeah, yes. I do understand, and I don't know about this for sure, but there is a bill being in the process somewhere having to do with legislative use of computers. There's some kind of foolishness with it that you can use the computers that some uses of the computers by legislature is inappropriate. But you can use the telephone, and I can use the telephone on the landline, on my computer while I'm in the building, and that's okay. But that costs the state money for me to use that landline because there is time, and it costs the state no money for me to use the wireless system because there is no cost. That's all there. So we've got some peculiarities around the technology. And the rules haven't all necessarily caught up with each other, and hopefully we will have a limited number of violations as you have encountered, and people will be more responsible, and that we'll work our way through the problems, which isn't really the Secretary of State said within the Elections Division question, which has come up for you. So. And we're talking a lot, keeping you from finishing up with your work, so let's get on with the job at hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've now heard from most of the division directors and the divisions of the Secretary of State's agency. And today I want to present our response to a task that we were given as part of this budget process, which was to outline to you how we would make a 2% cut in our budget. And I'm going to do part of it, and Gene's going to do part of it. I think you've seen in the past week, hearing from our directors, there's been a lot of testimony talking about how the budget directors or how the division directors have dealt with budget cuts in the past. And I have to tell you very honestly, I feel like the agency has been trimmed so that there's not a lot of excess fat on the limbs right now. It's a pretty lean agency, and we're very proud of that we've been able to continue to deliver services with reducing budget. A 2% cut in our budget at this point would mean not just decreasing services or supplies. What it would mean is cutting staff. If you'll refer to the spreadsheet we've handed out, you'll see what I mean. We don't feel that a 2% cut would benefit either the agency or the public we serve, but if we were charged with making such cuts, here's where we would make them. We would propose addressing this decrease in funding through 1% incremental cuts in general fund and other funds. All general fund cuts would mean eliminating personnel, laying people off. The first 1% of general fund cut would be to eliminate one clerical position that the Elections Division has asked to be filled. We're currently hiring someone for this job as it is a critically needed position in a very busy division, so we would be loath to stop that hiring process. Many of you have remarked, and we very much appreciated your remarks, about the helpfulness of the Elections Division staff, and there are only 15 FTE in the Elections Division, and we really appreciate that you've been very spoken very kindly about their response when you've come to them with problems. I have to tell you that kind of service, we would make every effort to continue it, but it would be strained if we had to cut this clerical position. It just adds to the duties of the other workers and makes them less happy day to day. A second personnel cut could bring another 1% savings by eliminating a position in the Archives Division, which currently accomplishes significant amounts of work with only 22 FTE. This potential cut would involve laying off a current employee and would result in limitations to the services the division provides to the public and provides to other agencies in terms of record storage. Two other cuts of 1% each could be found again in Elections and also in Archives, the two divisions that are dependent upon general funds. Those are our two really general fund dependent divisions. Both of those cuts would require eliminating personnel and laying people off, which would limit the services those critical divisions provide to all of us and to the citizens of the state. So that's our list of general fund cuts that could be made in our agency if a 2% reduction in our budget is required. I really want to be clear. I think I have been, but I want to say that again, that we are not offering these cuts to you, and we do not recommend that these cuts be made. We are simply telling you what we will do if a 2% general fund cut is required. It's real clear that these cuts would not improve our ability to do the work that we're charged with doing for the people of Oregon, and would in fact impede our ability to deliver the services they're required by law to provide. So now my deputy, Gene, will discuss the other potential other fund cuts that could be made to our budget.
Our spreadsheet is fairly clear. We've tried to come up with 1% increments of our other funds. The first, I'm just going to walk through this here. Our first 1% cut would include eliminating one position out of package 131, which is the K-12 audit package. Also eliminating package 122, which is the archives municipal fee bill. Both of these are tied to legislation, so it would make sense also to maybe tie the financial piece of it to the legislation and take them out of our budget. And then the final piece of the first 1% would be to take $75,000 out of program option package 172, which is the corporation package, and this would eliminate the e-payment enhancement. Currently, we are able to take credit card payments but not e-checks, and that is something our customers would like, and we would just delay this and not do this at this time. So that's our first 1% for other funds.
Mr. Chair?
Thank
you. So for clarification on a couple of things, first of all, clarification on the layout. You have the first page, which is says increment 1, okay, and then increment 2 and 3 and 4.
Yeah.
Those are all 1% increments. So when I turn to increment 2 and I see some of the same things on that page that I see on the previous page, that's kind of
cumulative.
A cumulative effect. Okay, thank you. The other question that I have is with regards to this audits division and the elimination of program option package 131, I have a concern about the fact that you're saying in there that if it was eliminated, that you would do this out of existing resources anyway and then just let other work in the office go undone. I have a real concern about that because, number one, is what's the other work in the office that's going to go undone? And the second question is, if you can do this with existing resources anyway, why are we discussing the addition of the position?
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, what it says is if the legislation passes and we do not get the funding or the positions, we'd be mandated to do this, so we'd have to try to figure out within existing resources how we would do it. It's not, I mean, it's like what every day when they have more workload than resources, you know. And Chuck would have to evaluate, this is what we have to get done now, let's move the resources over here. It could be a timing issue, you know. It's not an easy answer, but it's one that we face every day. You know, we have these mandates or we have these charges that we need to do, and you have to look at what you have and what you have due or what you have, and then manage to that. And if the legislation passes that says we need to do this, which we think we do need to do, then we would need to try, and we don't get funding for it or we don't get positions for it, then we would have to try to balance that.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So then my question becomes, if we were to make the decision that we needed to reduce your budget by this 1% or up to 4% because this keeps adding on, are you going to continue to advocate for Senate Bill 71 and Senate Bill 47?
Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, yes, we would still advocate for that and advocate for the financial implications to be tied to that bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
So then, actually, the best thing we could do is that if we were to make the choice to make this reduction, the best thing we could do would be to protect you from yourselves by not passing Senate Bill 71 and Senate Bill 47, so that you're not obligated to try to do that within existing resources. Correct?
Well, Chair Jensen, Representative Krummel, I mean, I guess that's your choice to do. But with as much dollars that go to K through 12 every year, I think it. You know, it's a good idea to have audits being done, state money going there. So that's why we believe that bill is a good bill. But you ultimately are the ones that make that decision, not us.
We already know my thoughts on that, so I won't go there, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Oh, okay. Don't you hate that when they read your mind and answer accordingly? Please, go ahead.
Okay, on the 2% cuts, the next 1% cut, like Representative Krummel says, these are cumulative, up to 4%. We are proposing that the program option package 174, which is $85,000 for a point-of-sale system for our cashiering system, we would offer that up. Like Representative Krummel pointed out, because we had to do these in 1% increments, we actually chose to break up the audits pop into 1% increments and offer them up in each increment. So that's in each of these.
So those numbers are different, Mr. Chair.
We did it based on position, so they would be a little different because I think there were state auditors 1, 2, and 3, so they are a little bit different. They're not exact because they're based on the actual position. Okay. Next one would be $15,000 for the program option package 123. We think we can make this happen through base budget. And then the final one would be to eliminate the program option package 151, which is the reclass and the additional position. And this actually could be moved to probably one of the first choices because, like Peter talked to you about the other day, we found a better solution to this. So we actually don't need this, you know, because we have found a better solution to the security issue out at OSCI, out of Carl Center.
Which one is that again? I'm sorry.
Program option package 151, it's the $97,498.
so you don't need that anyway.
Exactly. We've worked with OSCI to find a solution to our security system by sharing a room with another program.
So we can just take it off the list now.
All right. the third increment is, again, a position in the audits division out of package 131. And then there is $25,000 out of the Blue Book program. And this would be right out of their base limitation, $25,000. We think we can, it's a fairly efficient program, so we think that that $25,000 won't hurt the program at all. And then $125,000 out of program option package 172. This would be for the component of that package that is for the trade and service mark database and images online. So we would just delay that project and not do it. And the final 1%. $140,000 would be coming out of Audits Division Professional Services, which is the line item in our budget that we pay for contract auditors. If that was eliminated, we would have to try to look at where other resources were dedicated and make sure we were getting our work done. And then $25,000 out of administrative rules, which is basically the same as the Blue Book. It's an efficient program. We think we can find that savings in that program. And then the final one would be $108,321, which would eliminate the program option package 152. This was to obtain resources to handle the privacy issue within the documents that we received that contain Social Security and dealing with that issue. So that is our final one. That one is actually one we're not real happy to give up because we think we really need that. But that would be our other fund suggestions in 1% increments.
Questions?
I'm still thinking.
Still thinking. Percent higher? Is that the question forming in your...
No, I'm okay.
Okay.
It was more a comment, and I think we can do without it. So.
Comments are welcome, too.
Your restraint is out.
Representative Crummell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So on the increment two, the position that in the corporation division that you said you don't need anyway, and so if we did eliminate that 97, I guess in all seriousness, does this kind of fall under the definition of we're going to ask for everything and hope we get most of it?
Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, no, this actually comes out of, we put our budget together about 18 months ago, and at that point we did need this. And then a solution came in the interim after it was submitted. And so actually that's what it is. We found a better solution than hiring more people, which is more acceptable to us. So.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions of the agency this morning before we bring them back again on the clock?
I do have one other question.
We do also, have the option someplace to add money.
I don't know where we're getting it, but.
Well, and
I don't either.
I don't either, but start shaking people by their ankles as they come in the door, I guess. Been there, done that already, right? In increment number four with the audits division, reducing the amount of professional services and the contract auditors, what would the overall effect of that be from a standpoint of what's on the audit division's plate right now, and their ability to get all of those tasks done?
Chair Jensen, Representative Kummel, I can't answer that for you. I would have to get that back to you. I'm sure Chuck can answer that, but we can get that to you.
Maybe that would be something interesting. And then, of course, Mr. Chair, it also, you know, and I was mentioning about this, wherever it went this on increment two, this $97,000 deal, but since they also were creative and found another solution that was more acceptable to them, do we give them a bonus by allowing them to take those dollars and redirect them in another way that's most helpful to their department?
We might have the opportunity to try that. Whether we can get it by the co-chairs, is another question. If we could find another place, and get a little bit more, then we might be able to. Yeah, I don't know. That's just, we need to look at this budget, obviously. One other question, and maybe this is just my failure to remember, but it strikes me that one of the performance measures we could have for the audits division is how much money they make for us. I'd use that in, to be in a positive light on that, rather than sounding like a negative light, how much money they save for us. If I can use an example, familiar with a school district, a community college, a number of years ago, when the financial aid issue was being discussed, the auditor was able to identify a place of weakness in a system, and a place where tracking was inadequate, and explained to the particular school district that they needed to do some things differently, because this was Uncle's money that they were playing with, and that if Uncle came in and did audits, we might find ourselves facing a huge liability. So we changed the practice and the policies that we had at that school district, and as a consequence avoided some of the wrath of Washington. And there were a number of community colleges, it's probably been 20 years ago, but a number of community colleges around the state that wound up with what I would call major fines from the federal government for misappropriation of federal dollars. So in a way, that an audit should serve to keep us on the track so that we don't encounter problems down the line from some other source. And do you have those performance measures there that mm-hmm. you're looking at? Do they have a performance measure that would address that? I'm sorry. That's fine,
Chair Jensen. We have a couple different ones. I mean, we have percentage of the recommendations implemented, which is that should show some savings. Then we also have dollar savings per dollar spent on audits. So there's that. I mean, we don't actually say this, I think the closest one is, and then value of revenue enhancement savings and question cost and audit report. So that's.
I'll look at those before we get done and see what. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, philosophically, it changes the entire debate. It I think, is analogous to, do state police write tickets to make revenue, or do state police write tickets to improve driver behavior and increase safety? And I would rather have audits seen in the terminology as achieving best business practices than a hunt for money.
Yeah,
and I think it changes the relationship between the auditors and the subjects of the audit in a really dramatic way to have it be a revenue generator.
I wasn't referring it to it in that context. I mean, I was more in the context of saving of money that I'm, you know, looking at the performance audit. And I do appreciate, you know, what you're saying, that when banks see the federal auditors are, you know, coming, they cringe, you know, because it's all going to be the guillotine sort of thing.
Well, the comment you just made, though, speaks to a very important point, and that is how aggressively the subjects of the audit implement the management recommendations. And it has been my experience in the private sector that if a board of directors sees a management letter, they are all over themselves to try to correct it. Having run an agency for 5 years and been pretty deep in the bureaucracy, it strikes me that when agencies get an audit letter, it's a series of negotiations to try to make the audit look less critical, and it is a parsing of the phraseology that's used, and it's this negotiated thing before it goes public to try to lessen the blow. I would rather see a performance measure that says an agency got a management letter, how quickly did they respond, how fully was the recommendation implemented. And frankly, I'd like to see a lot less leniency and ability to negotiate the terminology of the management letters in the audits division. If an agency gets whacked and a professional auditor using auditing standards that are acceptable at a national on a national basis, I'd like to eliminate any potential to sugarcoat the outcome.
As usual. Senator Johnson is much more eloquent at saying what I'm trying to.
That would be
at.
The word whacked.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, we do have a performance measure that looks at how many of our recommendations, audit recommendations, are implemented by the agency. And so we do track that.
I would, Mr. Chair. I would frankly like to get the head of the audits division on the record with respect to how much negotiation occurs after the first interaction with the subject of the audit before the audit goes public.
Senator Johnson, maybe we can make a point to do that during the work session.
I'd like to do that, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind.
Darren will make that.
Absolutely.
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chair Jensen. A comment. I think if the legislature were considered, as I believe Representative Crummell suggested some time back, that if the legislature were considered the client, then the JLAC committee would get the raw data on these audits, and that would bypass the sugarcoating that Senator Johnson so eloquently pointed out.
Thank you, Senator.
And then the second thing, I've just been running some numbers here, it's sort of in my head. You have 11 unfilled positions, assuming that total employee compensation is $75,000 a year per, you know, with the OP and everything for each one of those, $150,000 per biennium, comes out to $1.6 million, which is almost 3% of your budget. So, you know, what I would like to see, with the chief's permission to ask, is a more detailed response as to where that money goes. If you have a position that isn't filled for an entire year, how long they're not filled, and it's not not an exercise or an accusation in any way toward the Secretary of State, but I think it would be an interesting exercise for all agencies to be able to point out how long that position was unfilled, how much unspent money, including OPE, would accrue as a result of that, and how that money was redirected within the agency, whether it be to contract labor or whether it be to something else, because that might be a great place to look for 1%, 2%, and 3% reductions right there in those unfilled positions.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Good one.
Just as a point of clarification, Senator Whitsitt, built into everyone's budget is a vacancy factor. And what they have done is they take past, they go back to the past biennium. They look at how long positions were vacant and the value of those, and then there is actually a vacancy factor built into the budget. So while there still may be some savings, there actually is accounted for in the budget itself an actual factor based upon agencies having turnover.
Thank you. That doesn't really address the length of time that the positions are open, though. Does it?
Well, it actually does. You're right. It's not for the current biennium. We don't go in and look at it. But what it does is it takes past. It looks at the past where the agency has had. It takes how long positions have been vacant, the value of those positions, and it builds this factor that is actually reduced from their personal services budget from biennium to biennium. It's not exact, but it at least accounts for some of it. Let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's good to know.
Representative Carroll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank Senator Whitsitt. That's one of the points that I was going to make about why we should be the client, and we should put it into all of our audit bills when we're asking them to do audits. Along the same lines, though, on KPM 004, which is the percentage of recommendations implemented, maybe a nomenclature that we should look at adding to that would be where it says percentage of recommendations implemented, and Darren can work on the wording for this, and actual savings and efficiencies attained. That way, you're putting when an agency, as Senator Johnson has pointed out, when they get a management letter, they get recommendations from the audits division. They implement the recommendations. What were the actual outcomes? What did they actually benefit from that? And I think that that's something that is measurable. And something then that is helpful, when an agency comes before Ways and Means, or especially coming before Ways and Means, or during the interim before E-Board, JLAC, all of the various interim committees, is being able to state, we got a management letter, this was the recommendation, we've implemented that recommendation, and this was our outcome. That then, I think, tells us as a legislature that the agencies are taking these audits very seriously, and it's not just a matter of, oh, yeah, I got audited again, and there it is on the shelf type of thing, I think is extremely important, and they maybe would take those management letters a lot more seriously.
Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, last session, Senator Morris and I spent a lot of time on what we called a suite of best business practices. And I would like to see your idea institutionalized in a way that as agencies come through the Ways and Means process, and I think in some cases we're doing it, to actually have in the budget report presented to the subcommittees whether or not there had been an audit and to what degree the recommendations had been implemented, and to actually have it institutionalized in the presentation materials. So that as agencies came in and started their high-level overviews, that would be one of the required elements of the presentation.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, I strongly agree, and I think it would be a very valuable addition to enhance the effectiveness of audits to have to clearly bring the audit to the budget process.
Mr. Chair, if you, even to the point, Mr. Secretary, that the audit be included with the presentation packages for the agencies, I think that it would clearly underscore for the legislature that there was an audit process ongoing. It would give the legislature a chance to see the depth of the audits. I think it would be a very revealing exercise for legislators to see these. So as I pick up the presentation materials for ODF&W, right there in the presentation materials is a copy of the audit, and I think it would underscore the nature of the good work that your agency does, and there you would have some of the business processes of the agency laid out for the legislature in non-presentation, non-agency spin presentation format. And I'm not suggesting that agencies are spinning. I'm just saying that agencies would tend to want to put their best light on their presentation materials, and an audit is not designed to be that kind of prose.
Precisely.
That's exactly. It amazes me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very kindly for your time and presentations. We are going to momentarily close this and open a public, open for public testimony. And I don't see any public, so I assume there's probably no public testimony present this morning. But if they are lurking in the halls, waiting, monitoring what we're doing, please get here like forthwith, and we will otherwise hang the gavel. Thank you, members, for this. I assume that time is not of the essence yet for us to get to the floor. I suspect we're in recess until some time. Or they're doing something that they don't care whether we're there or not.
Maybe they don't even know we're here.
I wouldn't bring you down here and get you excused without, or tell you you're excused without Lamona knowing you were here. Anything for us, Darren?
No.
Hearing, seeing nothing, then we're adjourned.